think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious hunt, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 149 of Low Limit Football on this 6th of January, 2017. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and back after a great, exciting weekend of football in Africa. We saw a new champion crowned. Which one of us last week got the prediction right on that one? In France, we see a separation at the top of the table. Did Monaco or Nice make their way to the top after their clash on the weekend? Chelsea takes another step towards the title. Should we start tying the blue and white ribbons to the trophy in the EPL? And Dortmund sticks their nose into the title race, but not in the way that Leipzig wanted them to on the weekend. And last but not least, besides a Marco Parolo 4-goal performance, the Derby d'Italia was the highlight of the weekend. We're going to discuss this and many, many more things in the Serie A with Semper Inter founder and one of our show favorites, Nima Tavale. So great to be back. For those of you, we've had a little bit of website fail, especially over the past like 6 weeks, but I think we are finally on the mend with that. And the website right now is up and running, and everyone can listen to us through the normal channels. Chat room is also open, so if you have any questions for Nima tonight, please feel free to jump into the chat room and post them for us. Nima's always super generous with his time, and I'm sure tonight would be no different. So very excited to get things going here. Let me head over to my co-host. I'm going to start in Bridgeport. Mr. Rojas, how are you tonight?
Doing well, Joe, and hopefully better than my friend who just lost $100 betting on the Falcons. But other than that, it was a great weekend. We saw a lot of goals. We saw Colombian score a beautiful goal to give Juventus the win in the Derby d'Italia. Mm-hmm. And it's can't complain. Let's hope for another good weekend.
Absolutely.
Next week.
I think we're gonna get a couple of good weeks now. You know, it's amazing to me that these leagues are still kind of tight, tight at the top, tight at the bottom. Usually in February, we're already talking about how Bayern already locked things up and how PSG's locked things up and Juventus well on their way. But we're not there yet. And so for me, I think as a general look at all of the leagues in Europe this year, this has been one of the better seasons for me because things are still undecided and I don't see them separating out in any of these leagues even to the end of February. So I think that's going to be great for the fan. I think it's going to be great for the Champions League watcher, where it's going to affect that as well. So I think this is a good year. It's a good year, just like a fine bottle of wine. So let me throw it up to the Great White North in Toronto for a guy who's already ruining the surprise on my monologue, Mr. Orr. How's it going tonight, sir?
Oh, I thought that was your trivia question. Sorry, Joe.
I had a good trivia question. You know, I'm just going to say it right now. I'm giving you my trivia question real quick. You guys might have heard the answer. I heard it on Talk Sport, and then I went and verified. And it's going to pertain to our opening thoughts topic tonight. Has this actually happened, and can you name the team that it's happened? One other team in English soccer in the top division has won the title and then the next year been relegated.
So, 1930, Manchester City.
City.
Yeah, 30, 37, 38. I thought I was going to get you guys. Oh, well. Hey, but, you know, so I heard that. I'm like, if, you know, if things go sour, I've got a trivia question. So, but how's things treating you on the weekend?
Not too bad. Looking like a snowstorm going to head in, but other than that, it's been pretty good.
Did you get your Gabriel Jesus jersey yet?
I didn't.
Oh, well, there's always this week, right?
I'm going to get another Sergio one before I get one of them.
Loyal to the bitter end. That's what I like about you, loyal to the bitter end.
No, it's nowhere near the end. Nowhere near the end, and it's not bitter.
No.
Well, the season might be, but yeah, no, the Sergio Aguero situation is much ado about nothing, in my opinion.
I agree. We had that pre-show chit-chat, and I know, and just to kind of fill in the listeners, with all the work Gabriel Jesus has put in over the past couple of days, and the rumor mill in the transfer window, people were talking about Sergio Aguero being shipped off to God knows where. And I think the three of us are consensus when we say we don't see it happening. They don't truly play the same position. They can actually be put on the pitch together and augment each other. So I don't see City doing it. I'm with you guys. I think you guys were also in agreement. We don't see Aguero moving in this transfer window. Maybe it's something we can ask Nima or to, you know, just to let the cat out of the bag quickly. Next week's guest is Calcio Mercato and Gianluca DiMarzio, great David Amoyal. So if there's anybody that knows anything about transfers, it's him. So if you know, we could ask Nima tonight about it, but we'll also have David next week to talk about it as well. So, but I don't see it happening. So let's jump into the show, right? We always start this off with the trivia question. So Mike, if you would do the honors, sir.
Okay, just hold on 1 second. It is, as of January 2017, only 5 Welsh-born players have scored 50 or more Premier League goals. Can you name them?
Okay.
Of all time.
Yeah, only 5 have done it. Yeah. No, Premier League.
Premier League.
Modern Premier League.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All time in Premier League.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we got one. One.
Yeah, I got one. Oh, yeah. You know
what? One definitely has to stick out.
I got two because I'm pretty sure he's Welsh. There's somebody that is in my brain right now, and I just can't.
I got 4. I need one more, but I got 4.
You're way ahead of me, so. All right. So we'll get you that answer at the end of the show like we always do. So let's jump into our opening thoughts topic tonight, gentlemen. And tonight's topic, like I said, pertains to what my trivia question would have possibly been. It's Claudio Ranieri. Article came out on ESPN FC this week that basically says that Ranieri is on the hot seat. He could face the sack unless Leicester turned the season around. You know, it's an article written by Ben Jacobs, and I read through it a little bit. Obviously, Leicester currently sitting, I believe, if I remember correctly, 2 points out of the relegation zone.
One
point. Okay. I looked quickly, you know, at the beginning. It's amazing that, you know, in world football, first of all, the one thing that I always see is it's the what have you done for me lately situation. Whereas, you know, Ranieri, people were talking about Ranieri never having to pay for another meal in Leicester again. And here we are now. We're not even 38 matches removed from that in the season, and we're talking about sending him off on his way. Mike, you know, of the three of us, you certainly are the most in tune with the Premier League.
And made the prediction that they might go down.
Yep, and you made that's right. In fact, you said, what would you rather do? Would you rather bet on the fact that they would be relegated, or would you rather bet on the fact that they would win the championship again? So,
and I went for relegated for sure.
Yep, and you would actually cash in on that if, well, you could potentially cash in on that.
Yeah, I really hope I don't though. But yeah.
So your thoughts on?
Yeah, I guess it's that story, like you said. What have you done for me lately? I know a lot of fans got up yesterday and left before the end of the game, to guess showing their displeasure at the team. And yeah, I guess he could get fired. I'd definitely let him finish out the year, I think, but I understand that they might want to bring in a new guy and try and change what's going on here before they would get relegated. But if they did get relegated, I definitely don't see him hanging on then.
Right.
I don't see him as a relegation, you know, a championship coach.
Right. He would. Well, let me ask you this. Would they sack him or would he move on? Because there's a difference between the two.
I think he'd move on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I would think so, too.
I would agree with that as well. I mean, there are plenty of decent-sized jobs out there that would chomp at the bit to get Ranieri in there. So why would he stick around in a championship side when he can head to, you know, he can head to a mid-table team in Germany, or he can go back to Italy, you know, even run up into Spain. Yeah, I mean, there's so many options for him.
Or I know it's a long shot, but you never know. MLS?
I was going to say.
Maybe, but it's highly doubtful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're talking about a guy that maybe it's kind of, I don't want to say it's a retirement move there either, because I don't see that being the case.
But I believe he's already does some consulting for the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Oh,
I think he does. I believe he's done. You know, he spent a lot of time in British Columbia last year, as we know, and
with Ancelotti, right?
Yeah, and I just. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm mixing that up. My bad. Sorry, guys.
Oh, all right. I was going to say.
Yeah, I mixed that up. Yeah. No, my bad. Yeah, no. So I'd actually know. Thinking that of Ranieri and mixing up with Angela. No, I don't see him ending up in the MLS. Like, maybe he'll just call it a day.
Yeah, it's true.
He is. How old is he?
I'm not sure. If you guys want to Google that one.
Check it right.
I'm not sure how old Ranieri is, but.
65.
Yeah, you know, he's kind of getting there. How much more time does he want to spend on the sidelines? Before he sails off into the sunset, you know? I mean...
Hopefully they can... even if they did escape relegation, I'm not even sure he'll be back next year, given that.
Sure.
Probably.
Sure, given his age, you know, yeah, he might say, you know, we escaped, we survived, I kept the team in the Premier League, we're done.
One thing about in his favor with Leicester is, though, they are traditionally very loyal to their coaches, so...
So it would be
even the last coach. What's his name? That big guy,
Nigel Pearson.
Yeah, even they were loyal to him, even though he lost the Premier League, but they were loyal to him the years before that.
Right.
Definitely. Right. And he was given a chance to make this team basically into what it was, and I guess Claudio Ranieri brought the extra ingredients to turn it into the championship team, but definitely. The previous coach had a lot of hand in last year's team, in my opinion.
Okay.
Nigel Pearson, that is. You know, a lot of that was his team. They brought in a few players. But getting back to Ranieri, just given the nature of today's game, yeah, he could get fired.
Mm. You know, and looking at Leicester, they've lost their last four in the league, you know, concluding with the Man United loss on the weekend, 3-0. Their next match in the Premier League is to Swansea, who's a team that they're going to be battling relegation with. Swansea actually turning it around a little bit.
That's a must win for Leicester.
I agree, because that really tightens things up, tightens the noose around them for sure. But then after that, you know, they've got a tough stretch, because in 5 days they play Sevilla on the road in the Champions League, and then they come home to play Liverpool in the Premier League before you see them on March 4th play Hull City at home as well, which is another match that is important. You know, a lot
for me, the players of this Leicester team have a lot more to answer for than Ranieri.
Yeah, do you
think Vardy's been terrible. Maharis hasn't been good. Wes Morgan hasn't been good. You know,
Slomani is.
They look on the round the field like they don't know what's going on at the weekend against Manchester United.
Do you think he's lost the dressing room?
That's the expression that is used, and that's the one that came to me last night. Yeah, perhaps that's what's happened. They're just not buying into that anymore, I guess.
Sorry, boys, but you think this is more important now, especially with the loss of a big player like Conte, who went to Chelsea? You think that's one of the fundamental parts?
It is, but it can't account for them going from losing Kante doesn't account from going from championship to relegation, not in my mind at all. There's a lot more to it than just that.
Right. Right. So I think that maybe there is somewhat of, I think also they're having down years. Or let's ask it another way. Instead of saying the players are having down years, could they have overperformed last year I mean, look at Jamie.
Well, there's no doubt they did overperform last year, Joe. But have you watched them on the field this year? They're bad.
They don't look nearly. They don't look anything like the team they looked like last year.
You think they
No, it looks they're a team going through the motions in most, and a lot of times they're looking, you know, at each other for an answer, right. And nobody seems to have it.
Do you think they part with you, Ulloa? Leonardo Ulloa, the striker. There was talk.
If they go down, and they also going to be getting rid of Vardy and Maharizos, they can't afford those contracts in the championship.
I think they're probably even going to lose even more than that. I think
Schmeichel.
They'll lose a lot. I'm betting they wish they would have got rid of Vardy at the end in the summer.
Yeah, cashed in on him. Really?
Yeah. Arsenal would have gotten him,
and Ulloa would have made more sense. You know, for them, instead of them running through what they're running through now with the whole back and forth. At least that's what I think. But, like I said, they've got a tough road to hoe. Let's ask you this, because obviously Ranieri can survive on two fronts, right? He could advance deep in the Champions League.
He has the FA Cup.
He has the FA Cup still, where they face Derby on the 8th, it looks like.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Can he, let's say, eliminate Sevilla, maybe get on to, let's say, the semifinals of the Champions League? Does that secure?
It would have to be very lucky.
I mean, but I'm saying, let's say they do that. Would that secure? Would that
not be if, like Rob suggested, he's lost the dressing room? No.
So even, I honestly,
no matter where he advances in the Champions League.
Well, no, not if you've lost the dressing room. And if that's the case, they're not advancing anywhere in the Champions League if that's the case anyway.
And we all know how well Sevilla's playing as of late. Talk about sticking your nose in the title race. They're certainly doing it, although it looks like Real Madrid might finally get a little separation there. Do they advance past Sevilla?
No.
No? Mike, how about you?
They have a chance.
Yeah,
I say no. I think Sevilla is a really good team, and looking the way Leicester is right now, as I mentioned, Ranieri losing the team, I think Sevilla could do a lot of harm to them.
Yeah, Sevilla is certainly playing much more inspired under their coach than Leicester's playing under theirs right now, don't you
think?
Which he can
put to his advantage.
Sure. I mean, so Mike, if you had $50 in your pocket to go run up to the window and put a bet on one of those two teams advancing to the next round, which team would you bet?
And what? It's even money?
Even money.
On either side, well, then I'm going to take the Spanish side. But I think Leicester has a chance. They're a totally different team in the Champions League than they have been to the Premier League.
And that's a good point. You know, so how does a coach lose the plot in the locker room during the weekend, but regain it during the week? Because the Leicester team we've seen in the Champions League plays like the Leicester team that played last year, and. Now they've been off for a couple months. I'm sorry, they've been off for a couple months, so we can't say that that's going to translate now because they've really had this lousy run of form recently. But they, you know, you're talking about a group winner in the Champions League. They're not, you know, they're not slouches.
You also have to realize. Go ahead, Mike.
They were in the right group to win that group, I think, and exactly. I think this year they're probably. Playing closer to the team and the talent, the results that I would expect than last year. Now, should they be 1 point out of relegation? No, but are they a team that I thought would finish in the, you know, 15th, 16th? Yes.
Mm-hmm. So well,
I don't think the talent is as good as everybody thinks it is on that team.
I agree. And just the loss of N'Golo Kanté is not enough to really change that dynamic.
That's what maybe you could, if they were in 13th or 14th right now, you could make the argument maybe that's why they can't break the top 10. It's because they don't have Kanté. But they're still in 13 or 14. But that's not even the case. You can't account for the loss of Kanté from going from a championship to being in a relegation fight. There's no way one player accounts for all that.
I agree. So, gentlemen, you know, obviously we wish Ranieri the best of luck, coach of the year, somebody who we like to watch, and hopefully he's there and he keeps them afloat.
Let me ask you this, boys.
Yeah.
Will Leicester remain in the Premier League next season?
Yes.
Mike?
2 weeks ago, I would have said yes. Today, I'm nowhere near as sure of that.
I think they're too talented right now. I mean, as you know, as much as they overperformed last year, I think this team is probably a mid, you know, bottom half, but mid of bottom half team. I think
if you're going to put a number, where would you put them?
14th.
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 Okay. Mike?
What, at the end of the year where I think they're going to be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Relegated.
Oh, okay.
By how many? If
they're I'm not going to say. I think Hull, Crystal Palace are both teams that can overtake them the way they're playing right now.
Ooh.
Get under their new managers. And I can see them getting relegated.
Well, I think that's a good segue because I'm going to bring in our guest now, and I'm going to ask him a question about somebody that Hull just picked up from his beloved Inter. So, gentlemen, let's put the wraps on opening thoughts and bring in Nima.
Yes.
All right, let's do it. So, Nima, I know, is ready and waiting for us. So, hopefully we'll just connect him up here quickly, but very excited to have him on. Joining us now on Low Limit Football, certainly one of our favorites and the man that's going to be in charge of making soccer great again, Nima Cavale. Nima, what's going on, man? Buonasera, how are you?
I'm good. That was quite an introduction there.
For the listeners, if you don't follow Nima, you better get on that, first of all. Because talk about having a political opinion. This guy has it, and he's not afraid to show it. So,
no, I'm not. When this asswipe got elected, I thought, I'm not going to be able to get into the country, so I might as well go out all guns blazing. So I keep trolling him the same way Milo Yiannopoulos trolls everyone else.
I'm going on vacation. I'm going to Cabo San Lucas. And and everyone says, you're going to Cabo? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to Mexico, but I'm going to be on the good side of the wall when I'm done. it is what it is, so hopefully we'll just we'll keep paying our taxes and move on, right?
Yeah, so. Well, hopefully this asshole gets impeached pretty soon.
I'm confused, Joe. If you're going to be on the good side of the wall when you're done, you're not coming back?
Hey, they got internet over there and it's sunnier. I'm just saying. Palm trees.
Oh, okay, I was just clarifying. Okay, aren't coming back.
Tequila's cheap, the margarita's cheap. What else do you want?
The soccer's pretty good. Nice. The soccer's pretty good, exactly. Too, right? So come on.
And you'll be able to play online poker again.
That's what, what's that? What's, thanks. You're convincing me even more. Now you're going to make me bring the kids. Jeez, I was trying to get away. So Nima, I'm going to kick it off. Obviously, just to gloat for a second, Juan Cuadrado's shot in the 45th minute was stunning. Let me ask you this before I get into my list of questions. I watched BN Sports and Gary Bailey and Thomas Rongen talk about that goal from Cuadrado on the weekend. When I saw it happen and when I saw the replays, Handanovic does not get that ball. I don't care. And I don't think Handanovic changes the way he puts his arms out or the way he dives or anything that he does, because it comes through a crowd of about three or four people. So I think in the end, there's nothing Handanovic can do about it. It was a laser. It looked like the ball was getting faster as it went. So, your thoughts about – let's talk about the goal to start. Do you think that that's something that Handanovic should have had, or do you think that there was nobody getting that ball?
Absolutely not. This is actually the first time I've ever heard anyone blaming that on Handanovic. I think that was an absolute screamer. There's not a goalkeeper in the world that could have saved that. If you look at the, there was this, Sky Italia had this angle from the goal where you could see it like straight forward, where you could see it from Cuadrado's point of view.
Yes.
If you look at the ball and the movement of the ball and the curve, it was like a banana shot. It was, first of all, it was hit hard and ferociously, and then it goes through a lot of people. And then it's hit so hard, it's so fast. And also the movement of the ball, it's a little bit reminiscent of the Roberto Carlos free kick against France, a little bit, not exactly. But it was fantastic. There's not a goalkeeper in the world that could have saved that. I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah, now what he was saying was that the way Handanovic dove, he dove with both hands to try to get the ball when he should have actually just reached out more with his left. But then I'm looking at Handanovic's position, and Handanovic, because of the way he dove,
the only way he can reach is if he reaches his hands straight up in the air. Like, if he were standing, he'd have to hold his arms up in the air. So he took all 6'2", 6'3" of him, and he made himself almost 8 feet long, and he still didn't get there. So
I've looked at this goal from every angle, and there is not a goalkeeper in the world that could have saved that. Right. I don't see how you can make that into a goalkeeping error at all. It was a fantastic piece of skill from Cuadrado after a stupid foul by Gagliardini. If you want to blame anyone, you can blame Gagliardini, but right. you can't blame Handanovic. I think Handanovic, he's arguably probably, together with Gary Medel, the best player on the night for Inter. So,
Medel was, I thought João Mário had a pretty good game too.
But he's always good. He's rarely the best player on the pitch, but he's always top three. Mm-hmm. His consistency and his level is just so impressive, and he's a world. If he just continues growing like this and developing like this, he could have a world class player, no doubt about
that. Is he the best addition Inter made this year in any of the transfer windows?
Without a doubt, in my opinion, I think he's been the best signing Inter have done since Perisic.
Yeah, I would agree. So, looking forward now, because Inter, obviously, before the loss to Juventus, they'd won 7 straight matches. They're still in 5th place, so they're still in a European position. And they're only 5 points away from Roma and 6 points away from Napoli. Can they continue their momentum despite this stumble and catch one of those two teams and jump into the Champions League picture?
Well, the thing is, Inter have both Roma and Napoli at home to play, and this is where Pioli, I think, now is really time for him to show if he really is a world-class coach, which he has kind of been hoping to be, and we've as Interisti hoping that he would be as well. You know, coming into where he's done everything correct so far. And he turned everything around, 9 victories in a row in all competitions, you know, started giving them the confidence, you know, tactically. They were very, very well. Now, after a defeat like this, where Inter were close, I mean, if you look at it from in the first half especially, I think Inter were very, very close and really bothered Juventus and maybe should have had one or two penalty calls to get on the score sheet, but we'll get into that later, I guess. But right. I think now the most important thing that he can do now is to get the team to forget completely about the Juventus game. And that's what a world-class coach can do. It's like the difference between a world-class coach and a decent and good coach is that the decent good coaches can fire his players up for a big game, but it's the other games where the world-class coach just goes on a winning streak and then ends up winning titles. And that's where Pioli needs to show that he is up there. He needs to demonstrate that he is one of those, that he is a world-class coach, that he can motivate these guys to get them to focus on the job at hand, to forget about the Juventus game, to kind of enjoy the situation. Now going into the Empoli and Bologna games, 2 games in a row, that Inter needs 6 points from. No doubt about that.
Sure. Let's talk about the play of Antonio Candreva, who for me, when I watched him play at Lazio, I always thought he, and when I watched him play for the national team, for me, he's always been one of the standouts. It always seems like, especially for the national team, no one ever has an answer for Candreva on the wing. We don't see that quite as much for Inter, and he really hasn't given us that form that you see him provide in those other places. So what's going on with Candreva? Why isn't he giving us what he used to give us?
The thing is that with Candreva, he crosses, you know, he what I like about Candreva the most is the fact that despite that he crosses maybe out in a game, he crosses something like 40, 45 crosses and 40 are crap, but he doesn't give up. Because one or two of them are perfect. I mean, when he against Palermo, the cross for João Mário, that was a goal. Forget the week before, I think it was Pescara, when he crosses an absolutely divine ball into the box, and Icardi just taps it home. I mean, that's the thing. But he doesn't give up because he does have that quality. Right. But at the same time, I agree, he hasn't been as good as he was for Lazio, no doubt about that, or the national team. But I think it's one of those things that it will come. I mean, Inter still I mean, Inter declined a 30 million offer from Chelsea for him in the January window, and they said that he's not for sale. And there's a reason for that, because the guy has quality. I think the more and more he gets, the more time passes and the more minutes he gets on the pitch, he will just get into it more and more. I think it's just an adjustment period. So I'm not worried about Candreva at all.
Sure. Now, looking at the rest of the squad, obviously in this transfer window, they got rid of Felipe Melo. They got rid of Stefan Jovetic. They got rid of Ranocchia as well, who actually had a great game on the weekend for Hull over in England. And they brought in Gagliardini. First, how would you rate their winter window, in terms of transfers? And what does Gagliardini bring to the team that they didn't already have in the midfield?
Well, if we start with Gagliardini gives Inter something they haven't had since the days of Thiago Motta. Mm-hmm. He gives them this kind of box-to-box midfielder who's strong in the air, physically strong, intelligent, good with his feet, good split vision, good vision overall, and can create and bind the defense, midfield, and attack together. And that's something Inter have been lacking since Thiago Motta. And that's what Gagliardini gives you. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that he's very young. He's only 22 years old. This is his first season in the Serie A, and the way he's playing, it's like he's played Serie A football all his life.
Right.
And against Juventus, I mean, for me, that was kind of his test. Is he good enough? And he showed that he is more than good enough. I'm really impressed with Gagliardini. I think Gagliardini is if he continues down this path, I think we've got the national, we got an Italian international central midfielder for the next 10 years at Inter, and that's great.
Right.
I think Gagliardini gives us all of that. When it comes to the window as a whole, Inter were very clear that they wanted to get rid of players. They needed to bring the roster down because Pioli said he wanted maximum 22, 23 players. So, Jovetic, who I have always rated, but unfortunately he didn't fit into the team and he didn't fit into the plans, and ever since last January, really, when for some inexplicable reason he was benched by Mancini after being brilliant in the first half of the season, he's been on collision course with the club and with the different managers that have been there.
Right.
And, I mean, just look at what he's doing at Sevilla. And there's a 15 million euro clause that if they want to buy him, they have to pay 50 million. I think they will, because if he continues this way, I mean, Sevilla are in the Champions League. They're in the top of the La Liga. They can, if they go places and they qualify for the Champions League and he continues to score goals and he continues to be as dominant force as he's been, I don't see why Sevilla wouldn't, I think, it's a win-win situation for Inter, because if Sevilla decide not to activate that clause, well, then Inter have a player who's been dominating in the La Liga who they put on the transfer list and they can sell for 20, 25 million even. You know what I mean? So that's just a brilliant, I have no problems with that. When it comes to Ranocchia, I'm finally happy that he went to the Premier League, because I think that's a league that suits his characteristics particularly well, because his movement and read of the game is not good enough for Italy. And he looks a bit sluggish and slow at times. But however, if he plays on a team in the Premier League like Hull, with almost all players behind the ball, where he can, where they defend as a team and he can kind of, direct the defense and is not left alone, then he won't be exposed. And that's what you saw against Liverpool. That's what you saw against Man United. I mean, two games he's played and two, they haven't conceded any goal, and he got an assist and almost an assist, two assists actually,
yeah,
against Liverpool. So no, I think I'm really happy for Ranocchia. His contract expires in 30th of June 2019. So I think that this is the perfect window for him, because I think if he continues to go on this track and maybe pull off a great escape with Hull, they will do everything and anything they can do to buy him.
Yeah.
And not only that, other teams will do that as well. And I think that's also something. So I think that, Inter will make something like 30, 35 million from both Ranocchia and Jovetic if it continues the way it goes.
No, that's pretty good money. And especially, like you said, he did play a great ball on that second goal for Hull on the weekend, which I thought was great. Let me, one last question before I send you over to Mike. Going back to Pioli real quick, obviously he's done some great things with the team so far this year, and he's gotten them pointed in the right direction finally after the mess. I mean, I was commenting to these guys last week that I was in Charlotte at the end of July, beginning of August, and Mancini was on the bench. And we're two managers after that because we had DeBoer, and now we're finally at Pioli. If Pioli was there from the beginning, do you think this team is actually in second or even first place?
I would say that we'd definitely be in second place, threatening even, I'd say, Juventus for first, because Juventus have struggled a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because what Pioli's Inter has shown is that they beat all the small teams. They don't draw. They beat them. However, you know, now they can lose against big teams and they can lose. But the way it's been so far, it's that this team would have been second fighting for first. Yeah. However, having said that, now is the time for Pioli to show that. I mean, these games against Empoli and Bologna are imperative because Empoli at home, Inter should beat that even though Perisic and Icardi are suspended. Mm-hmm. They should be able to beat them without any problems. However, Bologna away, that's a difficult fixture. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, 6 points is needed going into the Roma match.
Yeah. You have to have maximum points, or else the more you drop to the Bolognas of the world, you almost work yourself out of the race, that's for sure. So I'm going to send you up north to Toronto to Mike. I know he's got a couple of questions about the Serie A. So, Mike, why don't you go ahead?
Hi, Nima. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, buddy. The one question I wanted to ask you first was a team that was a revelation at the beginning of the Serie A campaign was Genoa. And while they aren't exactly in a relegation fight, they've certainly fallen to the wrong end of the table. What's happened to Genoa?
Well, what's happened to Genoa? I think the same thing that happened to Genoa is what's always happened to Genoa under Preziosi. I mean, if you look at the players that Genoa have had through the years, Mimito, Motta, Criscito, I could go on forever, Ciro Immobile. I mean, they've had some fantastic players, but what's his name? Preziosi, he wants to cash in, and he doesn't always invest it into the team again. And I think this is kind of a little situation where we have now. I mean, they had Ocampos, who was doing really well, and they sold him to Milan. And that's the problem with the Genoa, I would say, that they don't have an owner who reinvests that money. You know, he's been pretty honest about it, that, you know, he's in this for the financial gain. And so he, you know, whenever he finds Palacio, for example, or a Milito, or someone like that, he cashes in on them. And I think that's where they struggle a little bit. But you got to give them credit that they always seem to replace whoever they bring in. They always seem to find a decent replacement that you know, from another league that they can, you know, that they can nurture and get into, grow into a big player. And that's really impressive.
True. And I guess there's actually a couple of teams in the Premier League that operate that way also. A player that's been a revelation, or maybe not a revelation, but this season is Dries Mertens. Has it just been a matter of him being able to stay healthy, or is there more to this?
I think when it comes to Mertens, it's a couple of things. I mean, he had a real hard time getting into Napoli these past few seasons. I mean, if you look at the competition last season, Insigne was fantastic. Higuain was magical. Cajon is always good. So, you know, Mertens was the super sub. This season, I mean, they bought Milik. Gabbiadini was given his chance. He failed. Then they brought in. So then they had, you know, Milik was doing great. Then he got injured. So it kind of worked out well in the end, because if you remember in the beginning, Mertens didn't score that many goals despite being played in that number nine role quite a bit. But then it just worked out for him, and his, you know, him and Cajon and Insigne started finding each other. And I think it's got to, you know, you got to give these guys a little bit of time to play together. And especially a player like Mertens, who's not before this season been a regular starter. He's been more of a super sub. So I think this is more kind of him kind of, you know, finally, because getting into how the others play and the others learning how he plays. And also, I mean, his skill, you can't talk about. I mean, just look at the goals he scores. I mean, he's a fantastic football player. There's no doubt about that. I think he just needed a little bit of time to get into the swing of how the others play on a regular basis, and they've learned how he plays and he's learned how they play, and now he's just scoring for fun.
And does he benefit from the false nine, do you think?
I think so, because I mean they've changed their tactic a little bit, because Higuain is a classic number nine. Now I think the movement you see and the position changes from Insignia, from Callejon and Mertens is much more, you can see it much more clearly than you did under Higuain, where Higuain was much, much more the classic number nine who operated and ran like a number nine. With Mertens and these guys, it's you know, without any other comparisons, it's a little bit like the old Spain Barcelona false nine. You know what I mean? This kind of 4-3 under what's his name, Guardiola, where they, or even Del Bosque for the Spanish national team, where they played with a false nine. That's how they play now. And Sarri, you know, you gotta give him credit, because he's really got this team playing some fantastic football. I mean, they, in my opinion, I think they play the most entertaining football right now in Europe.
Wow, that's a big one. I wanted to ask you about Inzaghi's goal at the weekend. Pepe Reina was instrumental in the counterattack. The goal basically started from him at the back, three passes, and it was in the back of the net. How big of a weapon is or could Pepe Reina be versus Real Madrid in the Champions League?
Well, I think... Pepe Reina, I think if he just doesn't make any mistakes, because we've seen that so many times that in big games, or that he just makes these stupid, like it's almost like he has a brain hemorrhage and just draw, you know, does something ridiculously stupid. If he doesn't do that, and if he's on the top of his game and can give Napoli the security they want, you know, it's difficult to see. I think... It's difficult to see that to see how Napoli will knock Real Madrid out, but I mean, if Napoli continue to play the way they've played, with this offensive football that they played, and Real Madrid are also a very attacking team, we might be in for one hell of a tie, because both teams can score goals, both teams like to play, you know, like to play attacking football. God knows what can happen there. And oh, and at the same time, I mean, Napoli is one of those teams that can beat anyone at home at the San Paolo. They can beat anyone. It's the away game at the Bernabeu, which I'm more worried about for them.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's the one of the ties I'm looking forward to. Nima, I want to thank you for taking my questions, and I'm going to give you up to Rob now.
Sure.
Hey, Nima, long time no speak. How are you?
Hi, man.
Yeah, I'm going to continue on Napoli, and just as Mike has mentioned beforehand, they are playing some wonderful football. Obviously, I would agree with you in saying they are playing one of the most beautiful, if not the most beautiful type of football across Europe. Do you think that a slip-up from Juventus, depending on how they do in their next fixtures, could possibly factor Napoli? You know, you think that this title race is still up in arms and open? Or do you think that Juventus could wrap it up with a few more wins?
I think if Juventus, if this game, if the Serie A title was still up for grabs, Juventus would have dropped a point or 3 points against Inter this weekend. The fact that the way Juventus played this weekend, although Inter really bothered them, Juventus showed that they, I mean, this 4-2-3-1 formation they have with Dybala as a trequartista, Mandzukic on the left, Cuadrado on the right, Higuain, Pjanic, Khedira. This is a Champions League winning, you know, that's how highly I rate them. This is a team that can definitely go all the way and win the Champions League. So, no, I don't see any team in Italy even coming close to bothering them.
And looking at the race that the top five is having, I want to talk about a team that has been surprising a lot of people. And a lot of people have mentioned it is Atalanta. You know, Atalanta are currently fifth. Currently in the Europa League spot, 5 points behind a Champions League spot. They're playing some really good football with Gianpiero Gasperini as their coach and a player like Alejandro Gomez. So I just want to wonder how this success came about this season.
Well, that's a really interesting question, because Atalanta are known. I mean, their youth section is one of the best in Italy, and therefore one of the best in the world. They've always been very good at bringing in talent or raising, nurturing talent and making, you know, and then creating them, building them, and then sending them on. I mean, remember Filippo Inzaghi, before he signed for Juventus, won the Capocannoniere with Atalanta back in the 90s. So this is something they've always done. This season, I think what's happened is that they've got a coach who got in at the right time because played the kind of football that suited that particular team that he had. I mean, if you look at Franchesi, if you look at Gagliardini before he left, then Papu Gomez has been there for quite a few seasons, and he's been scoring for fun, and I'm happy that he finally is getting the recognition he deserves, because I think he's a brilliant player. I think he's a very underrated player. But yeah, I think it's a combination of several, you know, it's a stable ownership. Also, we have to also give credit to the fact that they've had one of the best, if not the best, sporting director in Italian football, not of all time, but definitely in the past 25 years, Pierpaolo Marino, who's mm-hmm. been there and who's built things up and structured them for quite a few years. He's not there anymore, but. No, I think it's this season, Atalanta going the way they're going, doing so well that they're doing, is basically down to the fact that it's several years of hard work and consistent work, and basically the opposite of Zamparini's Palermo, working like you know, working in a calm and structured environment towards one goal. That is, you know, built on youth. That is finally paying dividends.
Definitely, and it's just impressive to see such a team like that do well in the league. Do you see them going to the Europa League next season, or anything?
I don't think that they will be able to pull all the way to the goal line, because now the African Nations, the Cup of Nations is over, so Kessi comes back. So he'll be definitely be there too. And Petagna is a player I really think people should watch out for. But I don't see them, because I don't see them threatening all the way. I don't think Atalanta would want to all the way either, because they wouldn't be able to handle that next season when Kessi leaves and all these other players leaves, you know, to play both in the Europa League and in the Serie A. They don't have that kind of, they don't have that width. But and also, you got to remember, the teams they got behind them is Torino, Milan, and Fiorentina. And Fiorentina and Milan have a game in hand. So, I think in the end, Fiorentina will finish 8th, 9th. And they'll probably be passed by both. I think they'll be passed by Milan, Torino, and Fiorentina, actually.
Definitely. No, go ahead.
No, so I think the European spots will be between those seven teams. Fiorentina, Milan, Torino, Lazio, Inter, Roma, Napoli, Juventus.
Those teams. Yep, definitely. And talking about one of those teams you mentioned is Milan. You know, your bitter rivals have been struggling to your delight. but we've seen they were impressive so far this season under Vincenzo Montella. You know, they had a good start. I think they were as high as third, if I remember, heading into the end of the year. So, and now they've fallen apart to eight. Do you think that this is the same Milan that we've been seeing for the past couple of years, or do you think that something else is happening and that the team is, I guess, not good enough?
No, I think what happened was that Montella, he took over a very young team. He took over a very inexperienced team. And have, you know, and has given them the chance to develop. And I think that it was only expected for this very young Milan side, who play a very attractive football when it's working for them, to fall back. I think it was very expected. I think I would have been very surprised if they would have gone gone through the whole season and finished in a top three position. I think this is only expected. I think in the end, though, they will finish in top five, top six. And that's what you can ask from a team like this. I'm very impressed by the work Montella has done. But Montella has always been good at playing attractive football and getting young players and building a good offensive play. His problem has always been the defense. It's always been that problem with he had that problem with Catania, he had that problem with Roma, he had that problem with Fiorentina. You know, his teams don't defend well, and that's just how it is. But going forward, they play wonderful football, and I think he's done excellent work with this Milan. I really think so. I mean, Locatelli has turned into a hot talent. You know, Donnarumma, we already know how good he is. We knew that beforehand. So Romagnoli, I think, has been taking a few more steps in his development. So, no, I'm really impressed by how well Milan have done under, or how well both Milan and how well Montella has done.
Do you think that they can contend for the Serie A title next season if they keep this team?
Well, that depends on.
Well, of course, remove and get valuable pieces to their team.
Well, I mean, it depends, doesn't it? I mean, it depends if there actually is a Chinese buyer this time, or if it's another one of those Mr. B hoaxes that Berlusconi's playing. But I mean, if the deal, I mean, they say in March that the purchase and sale of the team is going to go through in March. If that goes through, and I hope it does, because Italian football needs a strong Inter, Milan, and Juve. With all due respect to Napoli and Roma, they don't have that. They don't have what it takes to be the top teams in terms of fighting Juventus for the title or fighting for the Champions League and European top spaces. They've had that opportunity now for almost 10 years, but they just haven't. They're just unable to do it. Inter, Milan, and Juventus, a top team. These three need to be at their best for Italian football to return to the very top.
Definitely. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. But there's another player who's there. I'm going to talk about two players now, actually. Both strikers, both who have been impressing for teams that haven't been doing well so far in the Serie A, but obviously making a big impact. The first one is Andrea Belotti, the Italian star who scored, I believe, 15 goals now, one behind Dries Mertens for the Capo Caminetti. I just want your thoughts on him, and also on another one, on El Cholo's son, Giovanni Simeone, and his time at Genoa, and what's impressed you so far. And also, depending on how they finish this season, do you think that both these players will leave their respective teams in the summer?
That's both of those questions are really interesting. When it comes to Belotti is one of the most exciting Italian attackers I've seen in a very, very long time. He's got this kind of tenacity that reminds me a little bit of Schillaci, you know, this kind of fire in his eyes, which I love, and passion. And also he's got this kind of explosive style of play, which I also really, really appreciate. No, I mean, Belotti is destined for greatness. I mean, there's no doubt about that. This Torino team, I think, I'm actually really annoyed with Mihailovic, because I think that I don't understand how this team that is so skilled, has so much skill, is so low. For me, they should be a top five, top six team, because I think they play fantastic football. They have the talent. Baselli, Benassi, they're midfielders. And then you have Jajic, Falke, and Belotti up front. So they're a good team. But, you know, Belotti, for me, he does have what it takes. For me, he's the next Italian classic superstar number nine.
You think it's that? I was just about to say, you think that he's that number nine that Italy has been looking for since the days of Totti, I would assume?
Oh, Inzaghi, I would say. Yeah, Italy are still lacking that number 10. That Totti was and Del Piero was, unfortunately. But that seems to be more of a kind of a Italian, that seems to be more world football, that the fantasista or the trequartista is dead, unfortunately. I can't wait until they return, because that was my favorite kind of player. But no, Belotti, I think he's definitely, the way, if he continues to grow like this, he's definitely the number nine that Italy have been looking for. Now, it would be very interesting, because I would love it if Milan were to sell the club and the Chinese were to come in and they were to build the club in the summer. I think number one on that list should be Belotti. They should buy him. He's a Milanista. He said he's a Milanista. He would be perfect. It would be such a good thing for Milan. It would be such a good thing for Italian football if they just broke the bank for Belotti, because I would be so devastated if he left the Serie A, because of course he's got this minimum release fee clause of, I think it's 100 million euros or 90 million euros, which is only valid to foreign clubs, non-Serie A clubs. So, I would hate to see him go. I would hate to see him leave the Serie A. I would love for him to stay in the Serie A and go to Milan, because Milan need that. And again, the Serie A needs a strong Milan. I mean, I'm not a Milan fan. I'm an Inter fan, but I want the Serie A to do well. So we need Milan to be strong. And so, in order for that to happen, Belotti needs to go to Milan, and Milan could build the team around him. Then I think that's something that's great for Milan and Italian football. When it comes to El Cholito, I love this kid. I mean, he reminds me of, I mean, I remember when I watched Icardi play and he scored those goals against Juventus, and he kept in his first season in the Serie A. And this is also the first season in the Serie A for El Cholito. There are so many similarities between those two in the sense of being a super talent. This kid can really play. He's not just famous because his dad is famous. I've studied him now, and I got to tell you, if he continues on this, he's already scored 10 goals, which is what Icardi did in his first game, first complete season at the Serie A. He's already scored 10 goals. He's already scored twice against Juventus. You know, so he can score against everyone, and he can score in so many different ways. So I've said it before that, you know, because Icardi's got a transfer clause that is active to foreign teams for the first 2 weeks of July. If a Real Madrid or Chelsea or whatever come and pay that clause, I think Inter should replace him with his father as the coach and him as well, because, you know, he's good. This kid is good, and he's going to be very good, and I would love to see him explode at the club he kind of grew up in as a kid.
Definitely. It's really impressive to see, and I've always loved those those father son success stories. You know, we've seen that with Maldini, for example. We've seen that with that player, but you know what I'm saying. It's just impressive to see a son follow in the footsteps of his father and do well in his league, and making a big impression. Basically, the same age his dad came to Europe. And to the Serie A, so it's incredible, and I hope and I wish him the best. That's for sure. Oh yeah, and no, Kasper Schmeichel and Peter Schmeichel as well.
Exactly. Yeah. No, but like when El Cholito, I think he's a fantastic striker. He's explosive. He's tenacious. He's got all the things that his dad had, but he's a striker, yeah. And he's if he continues, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up scoring 15, 20 goals this season.
Definitely.
You know, I really wouldn't be surprised.
Definitely. And I just have my one last question. Thank you again for coming on. You recently reported the news about Kostas Manolas heading to Inter in the summer per goal. So I just want your thoughts on that, anything more advanced happening. And you think that this is a good move for Inter to get such a talented center back in Kostas Manolas?
Well, I'm glad you kind of brought that up, because a lot of people just read the headline and then they don't read or listen to anything else you say, or they don't read the article. No, basically what has happened is that Inter have via intermediaries a deal in principle in place with Manolas, a 5-year deal where he would earn around 4.5 million euros per season net. And they are expecting that he would cost around 42 million euros as transfer fee to Roma. Now, Inter and Roma have not even begun talking about a transfer. So right. That's why the deal is far from done.
Right.
Manolas himself has expressed that, from what I found out and what I reported, was that he is happy to make that move. He doesn't, you know, he would mind making that move at all. And also he declined Roma's offer of a contract extension, because he's currently on 1.7 million net per season. Roma offered 2.5, he declined. And Roma can't afford to pay more than that. And also they need to sell. And also you have to consider that they've got a new sporting director, the one from Sevilla coming in as well to take over from Sabatini. And this is a guy who's been, I mean, look at all the players that Monchi has brought up through the years. I mean, Dani Alves, you know, he, loads of players that have done extremely well at Sevilla, which you know, and that weren't really that well known. So I think Roma are in a transition kind of, they will do a lot of interesting things this summer, and I think Monchi would like to set his stamp on the team. So I don't, and also given that his contract expires in 2019, this is the last chance for Roma to cash in big on this guy. Whether or not it's the right thing to do for Inter, it's absolutely the right thing to do for Inter, because Inter, you know, if Inter want to go to the Champions League, if Inter want to win the Coppa Italia, the Serie A, go far in the Champions League, that's something like 50, 60 games a season. You need to have four central defenders that are equally as good. And Murillo, Medel, Miranda, and Manolas are all on a par with each other, I'd say. So I think this is definitely a good deal for Inter.
Yeah, totally. That's for sure. Nima, I really want to thank you for coming on. I'm going to pass it over to Joe.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks.
Yep. Nima, I just have one more quick question. We talked about young Italian players, and one rumor that came out towards the end of the transfer window was the potential of Juventus looking at Gigi Donnarumma to come over and replace the other great Gigi Buffon. You know, what can you tell us about this? I guess the rumor was that they were looking at doing that in the summer, but I can't see AC Milan giving up on this kid and sending him to Juventus. I don't even for any amount of money.
Well, the thing is, he's got Raiola as his man, as his agent, so I wouldn't put anything past that guy. Mm. But at the same time, it would be a complete travesty for Milan, a complete disaster for Milan if they were forced to let Donnarumma go to Juventus. Donnarumma is supposed to stay. I mean, again, for the sake of the Serie A, Donnarumma should stay all his career and build a dynasty at Milan, because that's the club he grew up supporting. That's, you know, he came through the youth ranks. And the kid is a phenomenon. I mean, he's better than Buffon was at his age.
Sure.
So, you know, I think there's definitely an interest from Juventus. This is the kind of move Juventus would love to do, because it would be a complete smack in the face into Milan, and it would definitely kind of prevent them from coming back. It would hurt them mentally and their, you know, the way they view themselves. And so I definitely think there is truth to that. There's an interest, but that happening in the summer, I doubt that very much, because Buffon has said that he will continue onto the World Cup and then he will retire. So Juventus goalkeeper will be next season Gigi Buffon, and I don't think that they will pay for Donnarumma to become an understudy to Buffon. That's just not going to happen.
Okay.
So I don't think Donnarumma would accept it either. So it's a special situation. It all comes down to the Chinese. Mm-hmm. If this is real, if Milan are to be sold and the Chinese are to be can take over, Donnarumma will stay. Will probably go for Belotti, and they can start to rebuild again, and we can see the Milan of old.
Right. You know, and when you look forward, especially with the injuries that Mattia Perin has suffered over his over the past couple of years, Stefano Scufet really hasn't panned out to what many of the Italians thought he was going to be. So this is really Donnarumma's show, isn't it? You know, moving forward after Buffon?
Absolutely. This is Donnarumma is the number one goalkeeper for Italy after 2018 until he finishes his career when he's 40. You know, unless there are any injuries limiting that. I mean, this is Donnarumma's show, because he is, I mean, as I said, the first time I saw Buffon was when he was 17 years old in a Serie A debut for Parma against Milan, and Milan with George Weah and Roberto Baggio, who were arguably the best team in the world. And they, you know, and he pulled off a man of the match performance in that game. And that's how Donnarumma is, in my opinion, better and much more consistent than Buffon was at that age.
Right.
So this guy's a phenomenon. You know, he's probably the biggest goalkeeping talent to come out of Italy since Buffon was 17. Right. So, I don't see – this is his show, no doubt.
And, you know, with the path he's on, with the path Donnarumma's on, these goalies come once in a lifetime. You know, guys like Dino Zoff. You know, obviously Buffon, guys like Casillas. We just don't see this kind of talent come along this often. So I agree. I think Milan would be crazy to sell him. As a Juventino, I would love to see him. Don't get me
wrong. Well, I bet you would.
Don't get me wrong, but you know, I think it'd be crazy. So, Nima, thank you for giving us so much time tonight. Are you hanging out with the guys at Stereo City tonight?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they. I don't know. No, I haven't heard anything, so I don't think so. Not tonight.
I know I'll be listening, but if not, the next time then, right?
Yeah, definitely. No, you get those guys. I love both of your shows. I think you guys do an amazing job to promote Serie A and football as a whole, in North America and the English speaking world. So keep up the good job.
Thanks. Well, like I said, you know, at the beginning of the interview, we're trying to make soccer great again, right? All right, Nima. Molto grazie. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, we will. Thanks, guys. Right, have a good show.
Bye. Thank you.
Ciao.
Nima Tavale. You know, if you don't follow Nima, he's not the biggest Trump supporter, I would say, right, guys? It's probably the best way to describe it.
Yeah, just a little hate, that's all.
Yeah, and so he's probably getting a bigger kick out of that than anybody right now, but yeah, no, Nima's certainly one of the show favorites here, and glad we could get him on to talk tonight. And make sure you head over to Semper Inter. He's got a lot of great stuff, a lot of great articles about Inter over there, and certainly worth the read. So, gentlemen, I know we're running, we ran a little long with Nima, as we usually do. So let's jump into the week past and the week ahead. Let's preview some matches. So, Rob, take us through the Spanish league.
Yeah, definitely. In last week's feature match in La Liga, we had Sevilla taking on Villarreal. We predicted a 2-0 victory for Sevilla. It ended in a scoreless draw between both these teams. So they both get a point. And as the table stands, Real Madrid with the game in hand, with two games in hand, actually, considering that they suspended the game against Celta Vigo due to a problem at the stadium in Vigo or something like that. They're still top with 46 points, but could extend their lead to as high as 49 points with a win. Barcelona with their winner against Bilbao are second with 45th. Sevilla creeping in with the tie, 43 points in third. In fourth, Atletico Madrid with 39 points. In fifth, Real Sociedad with 38. Villarreal with 35, rounding off the relegation zone. We have Sporting Gijón with 13, alongside Granada with 13, and Osasuna at the bottom with 10. Top goal scorers are Lionel Messi with 16. Luis Suarez with 16, Cristiano Ronaldo with 13, Iago Aspas from 11, and William Jose with 9 as well. Our match of the week is going to be a very interesting one, I think, but perhaps it's only interesting for Real Sociedad if they can get another victory. It's against Espanyol Friday at 2:45 p.m. A win for them could extend themselves to at least the fourth place, depending on how Atletico Madrid do against Celta Vigo on Sunday. But I think that Real Sociedad, given the run of form that they've been having compared to Espanyol, I think they'll get this one easily. 2-1 Real Sociedad.
2-1 Sociedad over Espanyol on the road on that one. That's Friday, 2:45. Yes. Let's run over to the league on where our match of the week this week was a battle of the top two teams in the league. And at the beginning, and I alluded to it in the monologue, both tied at the beginning of the match. That was Monaco-Nice. And we had predicted a 1-1 draw, or I had predicted a 1-1 draw on this one. This match ended up being a 3-0 victory for Monaco. Goals by Germain and a brace by Falcao really took it to Nice and took them a step back. Now, when we look at the tables, we see that that Monaco lead the way again, 3 points clear of Nice and PSG. Monaco on 52 points, PSG and Nice on 49. Then it's a distance back to Lyon on 37. So really, the top three spots pretty much decided. It's just going to be a matter of which team is going to play in the group stage proper of the Champions League and which one's going to have to play their way in. So, but the race right now, gentlemen, is for that Europa spot in Ligue 1. Right now we have Lyon on 37 points, Saint-Étienne 1 point behind on 36, Marseille and Bordeaux on 33 points each, and then if you want to take it all the way back to Guingamp and Rennes on 31 points, we have that looks about like five teams, six teams separated by 6 points. So and they're all playing for one European spot. So that's going to be the intrigue of the French league moving towards the end there, and at the bottom of the table where it is tight. Lorient on 21 points at the bottom of the table, Bastia on 22, Angers on 23. Then outside
relegation zone, we have Metz and Dijon on 24, Cannes on 25, Nantes on 26, along with Montpellier and Lille as well. So only 3 points separating 12th from 18th and relegation in this league. And that's going to really be the thing to watch moving forward. Top goal scorers in France right now are led by Edison Cavani on 22 goals on the season. Alexandre Lacazette in second on 18. Falcao on 14. Gomis on 13 goals. Plie on 10. And Santini on 10 goals, rounding out the top six. I've got to get my boy Balotelli in. He's seventh on 9 goals. Our match of the week pairs up Marseille against Guingamp. This match is going to be, I'm just looking at my dates here, Wednesday. This is going to be the Wednesday afternoon clash. They have midweek matches at 3 o'clock. This match in Marseille. Marseille currently sitting 6th. Guingamp 8th. And again, this is a bunch of teams chasing that one European spot left, which Lyon currently occupies. Marseille also have lost 3 of their last 5 matches. Guingamp as well. But Guingamp is actually winless in their last 5. So I'm taking I'm going to take Marseille to win this one at home, especially with the injection of the new talent. Dimitri Payet coming back home. I think Marseille is definitely a little bit more talented than Guingamp in this one. So 2-0 for me from Marseille, and I'm going to send it over to Mike for the Premier League.
I just wanted to add, great to see Payet lose his first game, and may he lose them all on his return to France.
You don't like
him? No, I don't like what he did at all.
I know.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. Anyway, our Premier League game of the week was Chelsea versus Arsenal. We predicted 2-1, and the final score was 3-1. That's the simulator now. 3 in a row, Joe. 4 out of the last 5, and 16-8 on the season.
Time to get your money on the simulator.
Yep, 67%. Alonso scored for Chelsea in the first half, and then Hazard and Fabregas scored in the second half before Olivier Giroud got one back for Arsenal. 3-1 the final, and Chelsea looking for all the world like they're going to win the Premier League this season. Other games at the weekend saw West Brom beat Stoke 1-0. Burnley lost to Watford 2-1. Southampton with a big win, or West Ham, sorry, with a big win over Southampton 3-1. Hull beats Liverpool 2-1. Liverpool continuing their fall. Everton with a big score, 6-3 over Bournemouth. A lot of goals in that one, obviously. Sunderland with a big win over Crystal Palace, 4-0. Middlesbrough 1-0 over Tottenham, sorry, 1-0 over Middlesbrough. Manchester City beat Swansea 2-1. And the late game yesterday saw Manchester United beat Leicester 3-1. We talked about Leicester earlier, so no need to harp on them, just that they are in trouble. The table looks like this. Chelsea first on 59 points, followed by Tottenham 9 points behind in second. Manchester City in third with 49 points. Arsenal in fourth with 47 points. And rounding out the top five is Liverpool on 46 points. It wasn't that long ago they were in second, so it's been a bad month, 5 weeks for Liverpool. Manchester United, with their win at the weekend, stays in sixth. And just 1 point behind Liverpool now in sixth. The bottom of the table sees Sunderland with their win still in 20th on 19 points, tied with Crystal Palace, just separated by goal difference. Hull City in the final relegation spot is 20 points. And we got three teams just outside and all in trouble. So we got a big relegation round. It's Middlesbrough, Leicester, and Swansea. All on 21 points. So the real ending of the season might be the relegation battle, Joe, more than the champion, as Chelsea seems to have that pretty much sewn up.
And not to add fuel to the pro-rel boys fire, but that's kind of the beauty of the system, is that you see races all over the table, and it makes every match all the way down to the last week meaningful. So like I had said, you know, with about 8 teams separated by just a few points in France, we're going to see some serious relegation matches in a couple of different leagues here moving forward.
It makes the pro rel boys happy, but I can also counter that if you're in 7th to 14th right now, nothing to play for.
Yeah, nowhere to go. No up, no down.
Yeah. If there was a playoffs, then yeah.
Right, it's true.
But there is no playoffs. So the top goal scorers in the Premier League, Romelu Lukaku now on top with 16 goals, followed by Diego Costa and Zlatan, and also Alexis Sanchez, all on 15. In fifth place is Sunderland's Jermaine Defoe with 14. Harry Kane also on 14. And then it's Aguero and Dele Alli, both on 11. Eden Hazard on 10. And in 10th place, it's Benteke and Sadio Mane of Liverpool, both on 9. And I think our match of the week this week is, I've just got to find it here. It is Liverpool and Tottenham. That's Saturday, the early game, 12:30 p.m. Eastern time. And I'll put that up on Friday, Joe.
Yeah, definitely. You know, looking at that Liverpool-Tottenham match, we could see another team eliminated from this race, right? If Liverpool somehow find a way to get off the slide here and
take... We're talking the top four race or the league?
Just the league.
I think the league's pretty much over for me. They got four out of the six. We talked about it, if you remember, last week. For me, needed to get anywhere from zero to two, and they picked up four, so... It's going to be pretty hard for anyone to catch Chelsea. I can't see them dropping 9 points.
So like in the monologue, tie the blue and white ribbons to the trophy?
Yeah. I guess it could. You know, you can never say never. There's still 15 games, I think 15, 14, 14.
But
14 left, I think. So, yeah, you know, it's not over, but it's over.
Yeah, and, you know, because you have the table in front of you. I don't have it up at the moment, but just real quick, isn't Tottenham in second? I can't remember if it's Tottenham.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, so, Tottenham's in second, and they're 9 back.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you see Chelsea stumble and you see Tottenham take all 3 points against Liverpool, you could consider it a little bit of a race, but if Liverpool does come up with the win here, then, yeah, Chelsea definitely starting to tie those ribbons on that trophy, that's for sure, so...
Yeah, and Man City's won for their 10 back.
Yeah, so, and we'd have to look at the schedules and see what's left, but I kind of agree with you on that one. So, Rob, let's head back over to Germany and see what happened in the Bundesliga this week.
Yes, in the Bundesliga, we had our feature match was Borussia Dortmund against Leipzig. We predicted a 2-2 draw for both these teams, and then a 1-0 victory for Borussia Dortmund from the goal from...
Aubameyang.
Well, Aubameyang, that's correct. Yep, in the 35th minute to give all 3 points to Thomas Tuchel's men. And as it stands, the table is still Bayern with 46 points, Leipzig in second with 42 points, Eintracht Frankfurt in third with 35, Borussia Dortmund with 34, Hoffenheim getting another win against Mainz this weekend, are currently in fifth. Hertha Berlin in sixth, rounding off the relegation playoff. We have Hamburg at 16 and Ingolstadt and Darmstadt in the relegation zone. Our match of the week is going to be Schalke against Hertha Berlin Saturday at 12:30 p.m. with 11 points separating each other. And I think that given the run of form that Hertha Berlin has been having, I would not be surprised if this ends in a draw, to be fair. I think that it will be a bit lackluster, and I'm going to say 1-1.
1-1. And correct me if I'm wrong, Schalke actually drew Bayern Munich on the weekend to really open that door for Leipzig, and Leipzig didn't step through it at all. So we'll have to see if Bayern can run this across the finish line.
Definitely.
As I had alluded to earlier, this is kind of the tightest race we've seen in a few years here for Bayern to run to that finish line. So it'd be great, you know. Nice to see a little bit of a challenge there. So,
and hopefully we do.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving on to the Serie A, where our match of the week was the Derby dell'Italia that we had talked about earlier. I had predicted a 2-1 victory in this one, and as we had talked about with Nima earlier, the 45th minute John Jimmy squared goal, a laser blast from Juan Cuadrado, gave Juve the 1-0 victory in this one, solidifying their position right now in first place in the Serie A. So we look at the tables quickly, and we see Juve with a game at hand at the moment on Napoli, leading the way by 6 points, 54 to 48. Roma in third on 47 points. Lazio in fourth on 43. Then we have Inter and Atalanta on 42 points each. Fiorentina and AC Milan rounding out the top eight on 37 points each. The bottom of the table, unfortunately, we were just talking about 2 seconds ago with the French and English relegation races really being interesting. Here's one where I think it's completely locked up. Pescara on 9 points.
they've only won one match so far this season. Crotone on 13 points, Palermo on 14, and then we move 8 points up to Empoli on 22, Genoa on 25, Cagliari, Sassuolo, and Bologna on 27 points each. Match of the week this week, gentlemen, is a Monday clash for next week. It is Lazio AC Milan Monday at 2:45 p.m. This one is going to be in Rome, Lazio being the home side. But I think with AC Milan, they've lost three straight right now. Lazio is, you know, they've lost two of their last three, struggling to stay in this race for these European positions. And I think AC Milan really having something to prove. A win here puts them to within somewhere anywhere from 2 to 4 points from those European spots. So I'm going to take a Milan road victory here in this one, 2-1 over Lazio. And we'll see moving forward if they can really stick their noses in some of these races. So, gentlemen, one last thing I want to go recap real quick, and that is the African Cup of Nations last week. I had predicted Ghana being the victor. They, of course, finished in fourth place behind Burkina Faso. Rob had Egypt, who was the eventual runner-up to Mike, who ruined the surprise at the beginning of the show with his tweet. Cameroon winning this one, a 2-1 victory over Egypt. Goals by Elneny in the 22nd minute, taking the lead for Egypt in this one. But a goal by Nkulu in the second half in the 60th minute. And Abubakar in the 89th minute, stealing the trophy from the Pharaohs in this one. Match statistics in this quickly, gentlemen. I'm just going to load them up quick. Cameroon holding the possession, 57-43. Goals, shots on goal. I'm sorry, shots were 15-4 in favor of Cameroon. Shots on goal were 3-2 in favor of Cameroon as well. So a pretty entertaining match that got a little chippy towards the end. But for the first time since 2004, Cameroon, your African Cup of Nations champion. Mike, congratulations. Yeah. You got it correct. I'm sorry, 2002.
Huge upset, no?
I don't know, no. Man. This.
No, I'm not talking about this game. I'm talking about Cameroon winning the trophy.
Yeah, because
at the beginning of the tournament, I don't think there was too many people picking Cameroon.
Yes,
not a lot.
There, I would agree with you 100% as well. You had Ghana that was considered one of the favorites. You had, even though Ivory Coast lost a couple players, you had them. You know, Senegal was really the darlings of this tournament.
Algeria.
Yeah. Algeria would have been another one. And Gabon, you know, although you don't expect too much, but from the home side, and they have Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang playing for them, you'd thought that they would make a little bit of noise as well. But sometimes Africa can be as tricky to navigate as South America, right, Rob?
Yeah, definitely.
and I think that's what happened here. I think it was a little too tricky to navigate for them. So let's hit the trivia question again, Mike, so we can give you what Rob and I came up with a few names here.
All right. As of January 2017, only 5 Welsh-born players have scored 50 or more Premier League goals. Can you name them?
So I've got two names. What's his name? I don't think Jordan Henderson's Welsh, correct?
No.
He's not Welsh. I didn't think so. I'm missing somebody that's like a midfielder that might fit into this bill.
Joe Allen's not on there, Joe, and that's probably who you're thinking of.
That's who I was thinking of. Okay, so good. I'm glad I didn't give that answer. Gareth Bale, first of all, right?
No.
What?
Yeah.
No, he doesn't have 50 Premier League goals.
Wow.
He wasn't there for too long.
Wow. All right. Ryan Giggs?
Yes.
Okay. I'm out of names now. But
I knew you were going to say Gareth Bale when you said, I got one right away. I knew that.
And that was the first thing.
That wasn't even the one I got right away.
I thought
no, not you. Joe, I'm talking about.
Yeah, me. No. So, Rob, what other names you got besides Giggs?
Robbie Savage.
No.
Really? Are you kidding me? Oh, my God.
We got stumped good on this one tonight, then.
Eesh. Can't be Aaron Ramsey.
No.
And he's another
one. Okay, here's a clue for one of them. Former Manchester United and Manchester City. Manchester United player, Manchester City coach.
Manchester City coach, Manchester United player.
I don't know.
I have one.
And a current coach in the Premier League today.
No, I have another one. This guy, he's always there.
Yep, that's him.
Craig Bellamy.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. But that's not the question, though. No, that I just, but that that's another player. But here's, go for this one now. former Manchester United star player, Manchester City coach, and still a coach in the Premier League today.
Head coach?
Okay, so there's three. Okay, so do you want clues?
Yeah, go ahead. Let's
sure.
You know,
okay, Rob, I know you watch a lot of the English review shows. This guy is always on there, a bald guy, always on there. Bald. Striker.
Ian Rush?
No.
No.
Yeah, is he I don't see him on there very much, but is he Welsh? I'm not sure.
He is Welsh. I'm pretty sure.
Okay, but not well, he can't be, or he'd be on this list. Well, maybe not because
he is Welsh. No, he is Welsh.
But it's modern Premier League, so that's probably why he's not on the list. Right. A lot younger than Ian Rush.
I know he's not on the show, but another one just came into my mind. The Gary Speed?
Yep.
Yeah, that's another one.
So there's four. One more.
Bald guy.
Yeah. Not to be rude, but he's a little bit weird looking.
Eesh.
Big player.
Big player.
Not like a superstar.
Will the team he played give it away?
He probably played for several teams.
I got nothing. Joe?
All right.
I got nothing.
You want me to? How about John Hartson?
John Hartson.
Don't know him, really?
No, it doesn't ring a bell. I'm sorry.
I bet you've seen his. If you look him up on Google now and look at his image, you know exactly who he is.
John Hartson.
So the five are.
The five are Ryan Giggs,
yep.
Craig Bellamy, Gary Speed, Mark Hughes, and John Hartson.
There you go.
Yeah, it doesn't ring a bell to me. This
did you look
one.
At him?
Yeah, I did. No, it doesn't ring a bell. I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought for sure you would know who he was.
No, when I thought English review, I thought Ian Rush for one second.
Yeah, I guess, but because it's not modern EPL. Exactly. But John Hartson played for Luton Town, Arsenal, West Ham United, Wimbledon, Coventry, Celtic, West Bromwich Albion, and ended his career with Norwich.
So he's definitely been all around, that's for sure.
Yep. Yeah. All around UK, anyways.
Let me see. Now I'm curious to see how many Bell has. I'm curious now. I want to see.
He's probably in the mid-20s now. Mid-20s to low 30s, I'll bet.
47.
Oh,
shit. Ooh.
It's not 50.
I mean, I wonder how many do you have with Southampton?
Five. And 42 with Spurs.
Huh.
It's not
50. Oh, there you go. Close, but he doesn't quite make that list.
So, nope, he doesn't. So
I bet a lot of people would say him.
Gentlemen, one more note I'd like to add to the listeners that if you're ever interested in writing articles, soccer articles for the website, I know that we've got the website somewhat stable at this point and like to move forward with some content. So if you're listening and you're interested in ever writing an article, reach out to us here at Low Limit Football. You can reach out to our Twitter handle at Low Limit Football, and we can get you maybe published as a writer. So just wanted to put that out there.
And we're paying $1 million.
In Monopoly money, yes. So, gentlemen, without any further ado, let's hit the closing music.
All right.
All right, let's do it. So let's get this all fired up here, and I'll get the volume down a little bit. So, for episode 149 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Nima Tavale from SemperInter.com for joining us and having a great discussion with Serie A. Next week, like I had mentioned earlier, we're going to be joined by Calcio Mercato expert, ESPN FC writer, and Gianluca DiMarzio manager David Amoyal joining us. We're going to get to talk transfer window. We're going to get to talk Champions League as we preview that as well. And it should be a great, great show. So for episode 149 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
And I'm Mike Orr.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.